Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Self-help
from the hip.
Small don't say.
We're talking that shit.
Small don't say.
And keeping it real.
Small don't say.
With me and
them seals. It's so funky. Well, y'all, the conversation with Resma was so incredible that we had to come back. We had to hit y'all with a part two.
Okay, now I'm going to do the other side. I see things changing for Black people, the more Black people like me, you, and other people begin to say, you ain't defective. Shit has happened and continues to happen to you and your people. I'm not saying that same thing when I'm talking about white folks. I think when it comes to race, it's going to be at least 9 generations before white people know what the hell is going on with race collectively. They have no idea what a collective understanding around culture building actually is. They don't. Most white people don't even like being in a room with other white people. That's the dirty secret. When you put white people in a room and you start to talk to them specifically about race, not about NASCAR, not about how you make wine, none of that, but around the charge of race, when you start, the first thing that they want to do is find bodies of culture to come teach them. First thing that they want to do is to find bodies of culture to talk to. They don't want to be in a room and develop culture over the next 9 generations.
I mean, I feel like you've seen this in real time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, this is my training.
Right.
Yeah.
So can we just speak to that a little bit? Like,
yeah,
the training and how you gleaned this, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I know a lot of us, like, as you're saying it, I'm like, I don't even know if I've always been the Black person they brought in the room.
That's right. That's right.
I'm like, wait, that's why it. I was there.
That's right. That's right. Because that energy, they need to find ways to offload it and off ramp it. So they find a Black body, an Indian body, and I mean from India, an indigenous body. Like, they find these bodies to come in and teach them, but they're not developing culture. So when I'm doing, let me give you an example. So I have a 2-day training online that's called the Basics of Foundations of Somatic Abolitionism. So the work, the concept of my work is somatic abolitionism, meaning that we have to abolish the idea of white body being supreme, starting with the body first. We have to start with those pieces that show up in our bodies and work with those pieces. And so one of the things that happens is there's a 2-day. On the first day, they meet with a white trainer that I've trained for the last 4 years, right? They meet with her. And the reason why is that I want her to work with them before they come into the room with the bodies of culture. Right. Because they always come into the room hot. They come into the room either hot in that they are they don't know how to yield, or hot in terms of they don't know how to disrupt. Right. So they come in looking for the Black body or the indigenous body. Right. And so what happens is that when Carlin is working with the white bodies, And they know I'm not coming in the room. I'm not coming to present. That first day is just them. What they start to do a series of things first. And it happens every time. One of the first things that they start to do is ask, where's Resma? Is he coming in? Mm-hmm. Right. The second thing that they start to do is they start to credentialize. Well, I've done this and I've done that, and I marched with Martin Luther King, and I was they start to do that with each other. Then the next thing that they start to do is they start to do the patriarchy stuff. And then they start to do all of that with each other. And then the last piece is they start to zero in and try and blow it all through Carlin. Right? They try and blow all of that energy through her. And
it's like Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, that's what happens when you're talking about race. That's why I say race has a 400-year-old charge. Me and you understand the vibration of race. We understand the images and the images and the cognition of race. We understand the meaning making and the discernment around race. We understand the behavior and urges around race.
But why
we
do
understand
you think
the
that?
Affect, oh, the feeling, and then we the I affect. Like and then the sensation, and then the imagination of race is what I call the vimbasi. We understand all of that intelligence. White folks have not had to understand any of that.
Well, that I was literally just talking about this on my Instagram the other day. That when I am writing characters, there's a certain intellect that goes acknowledged. That many folks who are othered have had to possess in order to gain even the most basic of access. I've had to learn the culture, quote unquote, of whiteness for my survival, for my success, for my safety, for my all the above. Yeah. Yeah. And they have not had to do the same. That's and I've exactly. had to be able to do that, learn that, as well as maintain my own.
There it is.
Because the effort that they have done in direct and indirect ways is to present theirs as the pinnacle so that yours fades away, right?
That's
so
it.
We've seen that in Australia with what was being done with the Aborigines. We've seen that right here in this country with what has been done with Native American folks, et cetera. Yeah. The let's unlearn you of you.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Exactly right.
But I say that and I... You know, when you were talking about like, we understand all of these things about race, I have always had that in me. I don't know why. I'm curious. And I know Black people that don't.
Right. It's from, listen. Close your eyes.
They're closed.
Okay. Imagine me and you come from a people that were raped for 250 years legally. Just pause. Legally. If you go back far enough, what did my great, 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 great grandmother have to do in order to hold on to herself while her babies were being raped starting at the age of 9? How did she have to organize herself around that? And remember, rape was happening to the boys and the girls and everybody in between, right? And what is the amount of cortisol that got stored up in my great-great-grandmother's body? What is the amount of norepinephrine and adrenaline from dealing with that for 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, letting white babies suck on her breasts so the white women's breasts wouldn't get saggy. What happens to the cortisol around all of that? And that not just happening to just my great-great-grandmother, but great-great-grandmothers for 250 years, and they can't run and they can't stay. Both things, the stuckness happening at the same time. And then that grandmother has more children, and then those children have more children, those children have more children. By the time it gets to us, we notice it as notions, as faintings, as messages, but it's really showing up. That's how it gets back. We learn from our caregivers, not just through instruction, but we learn from our caregivers by what their bodies recoil from and leaned into.
Right.
And so by the time it gets to us, sis, we just have these pieces that feel like, why do I know that? That's because it's old. It's old. And that's why we have to slow down as our people. Like when I'm doing my work with Black bodies in particular, one of the first things that I'm doing is talking to them about orienting, because the historical violence and feralness that shows up when we watch something that happens to Brother George Floyd, and we watch it, and this heat and this texture and this volume and this charge shows up, and we have this sense that, ooh, this feels bigger. Right? That's what all of that is. That's what it is. That's why I say hip. historical, intergenerational, persistent institution, then our own personal stuff when we watch something that happened to Breonna. And then we sit there and then there's no justice. There's maybe accountability and that weightedness and our neck, and it weathers our nervous system. And so white bodies haven't had to contend with that. And so you did know, right? There is no broken line between you and creation. As you heal these pieces, as you stop yourself from flipping out of bed and running and going, and you start to begin to open up more space and say, you know what? I can't do it that way. If I love people and if this is love work, then I have to be loved differently. I have to be different. And that means it's going to be some pain. That means it's not the choice between pain and no pain. It's the choice between clean pain and dirty pain.
Yep.
And that's what you had to do. You don't even have to tell me what your process was. I know that's what you had to do in order to be able to get there, right? Mm-hmm. And those are the pieces that as a people, I'm starting to see us begin to be more forceful about saying, no, I'm going to remember and reclaim this time. When Auntie Maxine said, I reclaim my time.
Yeah.
That's what she was saying. Everybody thought she was talking about from this food. She was saying, I'm reclaiming my time because I can.
Yes.
How about that? That's what I'm, and the white structure cannot tolerate a free black body. It disrupts the matrix. It disrupts everything. And so the more you do that reclaiming, says, the more that that structure has to contend with a different understanding of what a black body is.
It's just, you know, hearing you speak and the idea of the free black body, I think for a lot of people it curbs at simply just not being incarcerated or at simply just, you know, having your own business, right? Like that's where it ends for folks, but it's so much more spiritual and physiological.
It absolutely is.
So, you know, you mentioned cortisol, and I just, for our listeners, would love if you could just give a brief review of how that what that physiological memory is, because when I came to start understanding about what cortisol imprinting on your brain is, it really opened me up also to better understand my partners, my black male partners.
That's it.
Because I'm a cisgendered heterosexual woman and I date cisgendered heterosexual men and black men. And the one thing they all have in common is PTSD.
Come on.
All of them, no matter where they were born, no matter their parental structure, just by nature of existing, they come into the world with that already. And, you know, you just talk about crack babies, et cetera, but it's like black babies are born with this imprinting already in you, which is what your book speaks to. And then the effort of becoming a free black body is you have to deal with that.
You got to deal with that.
To your point, all these other things that are coming at you in your actual life. But can you talk about the cortisol?
Yeah. So when I talk about bodies of culture, and I don't say people of color, I say bodies of culture because I'm trying to reclaim.
I love that. And I will be using it moving forward.
Yeah. So I don't say black people have or black bodies have a post-traumatic stress disorder. I say black people have pervasive and persistent traumatic stress disorder.
All right. PPSD. Okay?
PPSD. Not post. Ain't nothing post about this shit.
Touche.
Right? And so for me, this idea of cortisol, really, I want people to understand this. If you right now, anybody that's listening, if you right now go and buy a new house and that new house has just been painted, right? And you don't do anything else with that house. 10 years from now, when you go out and look at the color of that house, it's going to be different. Why? Because it has been weathered. The rain has hit it. Things have attacked it. It's snowed, all that different type of stuff. The same thing applies when we're talking about race and the black nervous system. There is a weathering that happens when you are in a society that is structured around the white body deeming itself the standard of humanness. Mm. Off top, the weathering happens.
Right.
It is, and I've been speaking to last year I spoke to a gynecological conference, and one of the things I said to them, I got to the place early, and I was just listening to people do these lectures, right? And I was asked to be the keynote, so I get up, and now the whole day I'm the last keynote. The whole day I said, can I ask y'all a question? And I said, now we got all of these gynecologists here from all around the world talking about, pregnancy and da 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 da, all this
yes.
kind of stuff. And y'all talking about the how more Black babies, even if you account for lifestyle and socioeconomic status, Black babies on average die more often in childbirth. Black women die more often than us. And I said, now y'all all talking about what you think it might be. It might be the cortisol and it might be how the adrenaline, blah, 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 blah. How come nobody is talking about 250 years of rape? Why is that not in your vocabulary? Why is the weathering effects, the cortisol that's produced when a people have been genocided or enslaved for 250 years? Why are we talking about the level of cortisol that may be in the bloodstream of that mama and may also be in the bloodstream of the baby as the actual nervous system is being developed? How come we're not talking about that? Fucking crickets. Right? Because we don't see we want to find reasons for what's happening to Black women other than that there is a feral, brutal system that continues to impact their nervous system and mm-hmm. continues to impact their progeny's nervous system and continues to impact the nervous system of their ancestors. We don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about they ain't eating the right foods or taking the right prenatal vitamins.
Right.
That's what we want to talk about.
Right.
So this thing around adrenaline, cortisol is a weathering chemical. It's only supposed to be in the bloodstream for 30 seconds, designed to get you out of danger and move on, right? To get either
it's a
out
survival,
of danger.
Or for,
that's
right?
exactly right. It's a survival chemical, right? Right now, if you were scared, if somebody kicked in that back door and came in with a gun, all of the adrenaline and cortisol would drop into your bloodstream. Once they left, if you weren't traumatized, bad things can happen and you not be traumatized, right? But people have a tendency to be more traumatized when they're traumatized as a collective and children are involved. That's another thing. But if somebody kicked it in, or after a little while and after you got people around you and to hug you and say, okay, I'm here, what's going on, blah, 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 and you pee that stuff out, what happens when the rape is 250 years old? Exactly. And that's what our people are dealing with on a constant basis. This constant, and it's not, I don't even use the term microaggressions anymore. This shit ain't micro. Ain't nothing about this micro. There isn't, it is. It
well,
is,
also,
it,
if it's it, happening all the time, everywhere, it's micro.
But it's aggressive. It's just aggressive. And so for me, this idea of us beginning to do communal scholarship around this stuff, like I have a master's degree, I got all that shit. But I'll tell you, if I wasn't more than my people first, that degree that I got wouldn't mean shit. If you ain't moored in your peoplehood first, you will be twisted in academia, right?
Let me tell you. So I am in the process now of pitching TV shows, and I've never done that before, like mm-hmm. in the way that I'm doing it now. And I'm always pitching, even if I pitch to a Black person, they have to get a white person's approval.
That's it. Absolutely.
A white body's approval. That's every exactly. time. Yep. Right. So when you get these rejections, and oftentimes, I mean, I have yet to get a rejection that was legitimate.
Yeah.
Like because the narrative is always like, wait, what? Like I've yet to get a rejection that made sense.
That's right.
And to me, something that makes sense is, yeah, I didn't like it. Like,
right.
okay, fine.
Right.
You
right.
know, not, like I didn't like it.
That's right.
But they be coming up with all type of stuff. And a lot of times before I can go to the step of, I guess what I'm trying to say is my first step always ends up having to be like me preserving my wholeness and pride of my Blackness, because it feels like whenever I'm rejected in those spaces that is being rejected.
Yeah.
And that's a step that
you know, those that bodies of culture have to go through that other folks don't have to go through.
That's exactly
right. Because before my individual self is rejected, I have to go through that. And then I have to preserve it, right?
That's exactly
because so often the next thing that people say is, well, then the way that I'm going to get accepted is I just need to reject this thing and
that's
then it's going to pop up.
That's right.
Right? So I have
that's
to
exactly
choose
right. That's it.
Us.
Every day. Every time. And this so here's another piece that I say is structural. The imposterness and the fraudulent shit that shows up when these folks reject us in some type of way, that's structural.
It makes me so mad that it happens to me. I'm like, why are you letting them
but
do
let
this?
Me say
why
this to you, is sis. This is why I'm saying this is a communal injury, right? It doesn't just happen to you. I've been fucking writing for now 10 years. I've been over to Afghanistan for 2 years. I didn't see someone. I know my shit. And when I write something and the publisher sends something back to me and says, well, you know, I have to sit there for a minute. I got to worry.
Right.
I got to
well, you know.
I got to okay. I got to go upstairs to my black wife and say, just let me say this.
Yeah. Because my opening is always, am I bugging?
That's right. And the answer is no, you're not. You're not. Not at all. That's structural. That shit is built in. Think about it. If they built this fucking structure on the idea that they are the supreme standard of humanness and every other body is a deviance from the standard, if they built that, right, then it stands to reason that imposter and fraudulence is also going to be woven into that.
Yeah, by nature of that. That's the design.
That's the design.
And that, if you don't keep pulling those weeds.
That's it. That's exactly right. It will get stuck. And before you know it, you think you're a garden of weeds as opposed to a garden of flowers. Mm-hmm. And you, that's the moorings piece that I'm talking about. If you are not moored in your people, when they start, as they fling their shit up against your car, right? You think, hey, I must have done something wrong because normal people wouldn't just fling shit. right? You got to understand, no, that's what, that's the structure. You go down that street. That's the street that they fling shit down. You have to understand that. It's structural.
I told y'all when we started this, okay? I said, it's going to be deep today. I done already almost cried like 3 times. And not sad tears, but just like rage tears, you know, just Baldwin tears.
That's it.
And
there's a lot of grief in this shit, sis. There's a lot of grief in this shit.
Well, you know, and that's real. There's a lot of, and which is why I really try my best to fight for my joy. Yeah. And sometimes that can feel like a betrayal. And that's also by design.
That's exactly right.
You know, this idea that if you are in enjoyment, that you are disregarding those who are in the struggle with you.
Yeah. No.
And there's a balance. Then there's an awareness and there's a responsibility that you have to dance with. And
that's right.
And it's, again, it's fucking exhausting, actually.
It is. That's why the NAP ministry is so revolutionary. Yeah. Telling Black people, you have time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, you have time.
Like, you can, design your own time. So we have a segment on this podcast called The Script.
Yeah.
We give folks some, supplementary materials to check out. So, of course, please promote the works.
Yeah.
The law, if you will.
So I got a new book coming out on April 12th called The Quaking of America. It is a real hard look at America's racial reckoning and what happened on January 6th. Mm-hmm. I don't think we understand, just most of us don't understand really how seminal that was.
No.
I also have some classes. If you go to resma.com, R-E-S-M-A-A.com. And I got workbooks to go along with my grandmother's hands. And here's another thing. This is going to sound weird, but there is a clip out there on YouTube, and it's by, what's the brother's name? Anyway, it's a clip from a movie called a show called American Gods. And,
yes, of course. Orlando Jones.
Orlando Jones. Listen, in terms of art, I'm a big art dude. I write plays. I write all this different type of stuff, right? If you want to know what the real deal is about America, watch that clip when he's on the boat. And he's playing Anansi, the spider, right? Mm-hmm. Watch that clip, because that brother breaks down in a like a 6-minute clip, the whole setup.
Once upon a time, a man got fucked. Now, how is that for a story? Because that's the story of black people in America. Shit, you all don't know you black yet. You think you just people. Let me be the first to tell you that you are all black. The moment these Dutch motherfuckers set foot here and decided they white, and you get to be black, and that's the nice name they call you. Let me paint a picture of what's waiting for you on the shore. You arrive in America, land of opportunity, milk and honey, and guess what? You all get to be slaves, split up, sold off, and worked to death. The lucky ones get Sunday off to sleep and fuck and make more slaves and all for what? For cotton, indigo, for a fucking purple shirt. The only good news is the tobacco your grandkids are gonna farm for free is gonna give a shitload of these white motherfuckers cancer. And I ain't even started yet. 100 years later, you are fucked. 100 years after that, fucked. 100 years after you get free, you still getting fucked out of job and shot at by police. You see what I'm saying? This guy gets it. I like him. He's getting angry. Angry is good. Angry gets shit done. You shed tears for Kumpi Anansi, and here he is telling you. You are staring down the barrel of 300 years of subjugation, racist bullshit, and heart disease. He is telling you there is one goddamn reason you shouldn't go up there right now and slit the throats of every last one of these Dutch motherfuckers and set fire to this ship. You already dead, asshole. At least die a sacrifice for something worthwhile. Let the motherfucker burn. Let it all.
Right? So that's what I would do. So my books and then that clip. Is like That one. And then the one from, what was that movie? Mandingo, when they caught the one slave and it's another clip. Yeah, it's another clip. And it's a Mandingo helps to catch a runaway slave and the runaway slave. I can remember this. It's a brother who's an actor. He's a beautiful actor. And he starts talking to Mandingo about what he's doing and what these white folks is doing. And that's another clip. These are things like when I'm doing my writing, these are the pieces that help me like, oh, okay. If I ever get off into the ether, clips like that help me go, that's what
bring you doing. Right. That's them thesis clips.
That's the thesis.
I tell them, I'm like, you got to come up with a thesis for your life.
That's right.
You got to keep coming back to that.
That's
and everything you do has to keep proving your thesis.
That's it.
That's how I determine, should I do this?
Yeah, that's it.
Does this stray away from my thesis?
That's it.
You know, because I'm trying to, you know, come back to this ground. Listen, let me also just say, you know, rest my very, just a sign of benevolence donated to Smart, Funny, and Black. And we were able to give people access to see the show. And we are forever appreciative and thankful to you for that, because the real goal is always figuring out how to get the community to get to enjoy community as much as possible. Right. And that has been something that I think a lot of folks forget, you know, in the process of just trying to, What were you saying in self
protection?
No, so you were saying self-interest.
Self-interest.
Yeah. And I saw a Hawaiian mm-hmm. woman mm-hmm. say recently that, you know, what colonialism brought was self-interest.
Yes.
And
yes.
I had never.
Yes.
It, again, that was something like I knew in my body, but didn't know in my mind.
That's it.
Because I feel like I'm always fighting to like encourage community. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, it's like, well, yeah, because like we need to have solidarity. We need to have protection. We need to have tribal, you know, support, et cetera. Yeah. But it was like, I didn't realize it's like, and also because it undermines. This pathology and this ethos that has been inserted into the mindset of people that didn't think that way.
That's exactly right. And I'm going to tell you this, sis. You just said something, though. There is so much writing coming out of Hawaiian sisters right now. That's a thing that I'm watching happening.
And it's mostly
sisters. It's mostly Hawaiian sisters that's doing.
women are like, we're really over it.
Right. Right.
That's beautiful. Well, I'm going to keep an eye out for that, because ultimately this white supremacist bullshit has been happening to so many for so long. And diasporically, we have to, I think, also look at ourselves differently in that respect, right? Because for a lot of folks, it's like, oh, well, there's a Black diaspora. That's true. But there's also just a diaspora of folks who have continued to be at the behest and at the, savagery of this supremacy, whether you're in the Amazonian basin, you know, or in Ethiopia, or whether you are over in Indonesia. I mean, I think it's really just, it's a global thing. And I, at some points I'm like, are they aliens? The folks who are doing this, are they even from here?
They from here, and the people that started. I always say this: there were five superpowers. All you got to do is follow every island that they went to, and follow every trade route. It was France, England, Spain, Portugal, and the Netherlands. Those are the five that set all of this shit up.
Can we add an honorable mention for Belgium?
That's the Netherlands. I include. Yeah.
Oh, but okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah.
Them motherfuckers.
But that's what I'm saying. And here's the, let me say this last thing. Here's the piece is that many of those people say, well, how did this take place? How did this happen? One of the ways that this happened is that once you agreed on the doctrine of discovery, meaning that as a European power, any place you go that discovered that have people, brown people or black people, you've now, or indigenous people, you've now discovered that place. That was an agreement among those superpowers, right? Here's the killer, is that not only was that an agreement, but what they started to begin to do was create knowledge bases and then share those knowledge bases as standard. Pause for a second. So when the people over in England were developing understandings on Africans and whether or not their skulls were so big or their brains were smaller or their lips meant this or all of that race stuff, they shared that knowledge with Belgium. And then the people over in Belgium that were artists started to begin to develop these operas around black people and stuff like that. That opera went all across Europe, right? Then the people who developed the idea of black people and intellect, then the people in the medical field from Spain started. That's how the knowledge became the white supremacist knowledge, is because those entities began to develop different types of ideas around who indigenous people were, who Indian people were, who black people were. And then that knowledge became standardized within the architecture of those particular things, within the architecture of policing, within the architecture of education, within the architecture of science, within the architecture of gynecology, where this fucker, the father of gynecology, had black women, something like 17 black women that he practiced on without anesthesia, and that's how they came up with gynecology. Like shit like that. And then they took that knowledge and made it standard. Mm-hmm. That's how white supremacy is interwoven through all of these institutions.
No, you can't say I'm sorry, because I mean, these are also, it's just like how you said that those, you know, those pieces from Mandingo and from American Gods, that they like help ground you. You know, we have to have these conversations. I don't want to have them every day. You know, it's not even healthy, right? Which actually, before we go, how do you remain mentally healthy? Or are you? Do you feel like you are?
Ask that question first.
You know, like, do you feel like you are? Because this is a part of my work, but yeah, this is the crux of your work.
Yeah, it's the thing that gets me up in the morning. I love this stuff. This is my life. This is my elders grooming for this, mm-hmm. you know, seeing how my stuff connects with James Baldwin or Fannie mm-hmm. Lou Hamer stuff. I mean, that shit gets me up in the morning. But I'm not, you know, I'm doing better now. You know, I'm not suicidal anymore. I'm not blowing up my family anymore. I'm better now. And I'm allowing.
Why?
Because I'm allowing people to hold me more.
How'd you get there though?
Yeah, I had to go through all of the shit that I just mentioned. I mean, when I got back from Afghanistan, you know, Afghanistan was both the best thing that I ever did and the worst thing that I ever did at the same time. And so it opened me up to begin to connect to my grandmother's and my people's pain, but it opened me up in such a way and so fast and so brutal that it took me years. It took me at least three to five years to like get my feet to where I could actually be a human being again. And through the course of that, my wife, stayed with me. Through the course of that, my kids would get away from me and then come back to me and be like, "Dad, we don't know what's going on with you." And, you know, and my family being worried about me and slowly but surely just, you know, starting to do my practices and starting to get therapy. You know, I'm a therapist and I got a therapist, right?
Of course.
And so it was really a hard fought. And it enabled me to actually be able to accept people actually loving me. That was something that I don't think before I went to Afghanistan, I wasn't able to do. And so.
Did you know you weren't able to do that?
No, absolutely not. Most of the time you don't know shit until you start to go through it. You don't.
Had
you,
anyone ever said that to you though, and you deny it?
Oh, girlfriends. Oh, girlfriends.
In the transcript, it says Amanda nods knowingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I just got an email from an ex who was like, I just want to apologize because I wasn't able to receive love because I was not able to be loved, and you did show me love. Yes.
Right. Don't know how to act. Right. But that's not just a testimony of my just my personal relationship. That's also that's one of those pass throughs. Right. This is we got those pieces. Are you right. Cancer? Oh, yeah, me too. Me too.
Oh, Lord. Jesus. Woo, Resma, how can you do this work as a Cancer? Cancer men. Y'all are like,
we ain't no joke.
Well, because the truth is that the emotions are there, but yeah. Society does not give any training to manage that.
No.
And I wanted to just hear real quick. So your trip to, so can you just contextualize Afghanistan for me? Like, was it for work? Was it?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was what's called a military contractor. And so my job was to be in southern Afghanistan. So my duty assignment was, to cover all 53 bases in southern Afghanistan.
A social worker?
As a what was called a community care counselor. So whenever there was a suicide, whenever the Taliban would breach, whenever there was a rape, whenever there was with military contractors, there were 17,000 military contractors at the time. Whenever anything would happen, my job would be to go to those bases, process those bases for 2 weeks, determine who could stay and who weren't damaged as bad or who had to leave and go home, and as well as give therapy to the people who, let's say, walked in and saw their friend hanging from the rafters.
Have you started writing this film?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't thought about that. I don't know if I made it. There's still too much crazy shit. But
no one knows that this, I can promise you that 90% of my listeners, including me, didn't even know that position existed.
Oh, really?
That's why I said, have you written this film? Because that's no one knows about that. I did not know that there was someone who comes to the place where the cray cray happened and assesses.
Yep.
Because person also then is in the thick of it.
And that's what happened. And then because I overrode the whole time I was over there for 2 years. So this first year I did it, I re-upped and decided to come back without telling my wife. I re-upped because my body was so oriented and acclimated to that coming home. I remember one time I came home for a vacation and me and my wife were in bed and her foot hit my foot. Now, this is after three months over there, right? Her foot hit my foot and I got up. And from that point on, I was up every time. I was supposed to be asleep over there. I was supposed to be awake over there. I was awake here. And I couldn't wait to get back over there. And so when my boss came to me and said, you know, we don't have nobody, because a lot of the therapists would go over there and then they couldn't stay more than a month. They would just like, right? And so my boss said, you know, we don't have nobody and, you know, you're doing this work and we don't know what we're going to do. We can't do this by ourselves. So without telling my wife, I re-upped. And, you know, that was one of the first brutal things I did to my family, and went back. But your body becomes so tethered to the drama and to the, and not
the
adrenaline. Yeah, not adrenaline, but just the day-to-day thing.
Wait, don't you feel like you get caught in the purposefulness? Like every day you have a purpose. And
well, that's the piece. Also, I was also caught into the way that my body told time. My body told time over there, not told time here. So I was oriented to how things moved, how things breathed, what the vibration was, the jets taking off, the smell of the shit. You know, like the one camp I was in, we were in what was called Kandahar Air Force Base. That was my main base. Mm-hmm. Kandahar Air Force Base did not have a sewage system. So all of the poop flowed into ponds all around the base. in 117 degree heat, right? So you get organized around that smell. You don't even smell it anymore. It wasn't until I came home and my wife goes, "What smells like shit?" with all of my equipment, because that's just you. Just
that's the vibe.
That's the thing, and you just get used to it. But it brutalized me, and so So
would you say though that, because you said that, you know, there were a lot of therapists that just couldn't hack it.
Yeah. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way.
But there are a lot of therapists who are just like, this is not something I want to continue, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm just shooting here, but do you feel like because of the Black body's proclivity for pain and chaos, that you were somehow predisposed to be able to manage this in a way others couldn't?
Sis, my override game was so strong that I didn't realize how strong my override game is. What I mean by override is that when vibes or energy begins to percolate that self, that makes me consider self, my override is to override those notions and do for others or give to others. That's override, right? Now, override, when you're in dangerous situations, will save your life. The problem is that override, you can work that muscle so much to where you got one bicep that's 22 inches and the other one that's 5 inches, right?
Right.
It's just you done worked it so much that now you use that for everything. And my override, and one of the things that happened, you know, through the course of writing my book, I realized that my override, I got a lot of my override from my people. Mm-hmm. My people and my grandmother and my dad and people, mm-hmm. like the first to have your own self, the moment that shows up, we override it. You know, for most of our history, people have had access to our bodies, right? We've had to dissociate in order to survive all of the shit that was happening to our people. We had to override in order to survive. Now what's happening is that the ancestors are saying right now, you have survived that. Now let's do this work so something new can emerge for us. But we got to do this work so that other things, so we can create enough room so emergence can actually take place. Everything that we need is already there, but we haven't cultivated the soil enough so there's more room so the nutrients can actually feed on this thing so it can move up. And that's all my work. And so when I was over there, I just override the fuck, you know, that's why I was able to stay out there.
Right.
Is that I was like, but the one thing that made me come home was my wife. She said, after I re-upped, I didn't tell her until two days before I was leaving that I was going back.
Mm. Okay, right.
And I know. And I left and I got back over there and she, you know, and then about 2 days later she calls and she says, and we having some, you know, we talking and everything. And she goes, I need to say something to you. And I said, what's happening? And she goes, if you do that again, stay. Don't come home. And I tried to get bad, you know.
Of course.
And I was like, I'm in the war zone and you pulling this shit and blah, blah, blah. And my wife, my beautiful wife, beautiful Black wife, she goes, if you do that shit again, stay.
I said what I said. You just going to be leaving one war zone to come to another one.
That's it. That's it. So that's what got me to come home.
So you heard her.
I heard her. And she was saying that for both of us, because she saw, I'm 6'1", when I went over there, I was 215. When I came home from my first break, I was 175.
Wow.
And she was like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. Did writing.
Absolutely.
Help bring you back?
Oh, absolutely. Because what happened was that through the having my 9mm on my car, through, you know, all kind of crazy shit, I would, my grandma keeps showing up. kept showing up.
Take your time. She was showing up to keep you here with us. She was showing up to show you pieces of you that you had lost or that you didn't know were there. And we are so thankful that we got to see them and we're getting to see them.
Yeah. So she kept showing up and I started to put together her pain with my pain and my pain with my people's pain. And I was a trauma trained, body therapist, and it just all started to come together and it started to like work itself out.
You know, it was two cancers on a podcast. It was only a matter of time. The tears, the tears was going to show up. It was unavoidable. So when you think about this later, just know it was bigger than you. Bigger than you. Just accept it. It was bigger than you. It was inevitable. Well, thank you so much for just your candor and your cadence. And I can't wait to read The Quaking of America. There's just a lot of work that we do to maintain as we continue in this process of the challenging, the undoing, the protecting, the preserving, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's always an honor to get to connect with someone who I feel like is really at the forefront and on the ground in doing that. So thank you for giving us your time today.
I appreciate you, sis. Keep doing what you're doing. Love you from the bottom of my heart. I see you out here doing things. Just keep doing what you're doing. Our people need you.
Ditto.
A podcast network. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.